Welcome to the deep dive. If you believe your digital identity stops and starts with the username you pick and the password you inevitably forget, well, you are missing the most fundamental truth of the modern web. That simple login is only the greeting card. The actual conversation systems have about you is far, far more detailed.
It absolutely is. Our sources confirm that digital identity is, well, it's the essential comprehensive data structure stored on computer systems.
Mm-hmm.
It represents you or, you know, any external agent. Could be an individual, a massive organization, even a smart device.
Right.
It's really the foundational component that confirms who you are, manages your access to digital services, and dictates how different parties can interact with you online.
And our mission today is to give you the blueprint of that invisible self. Because from the moment you send your first email or click your first link, you start generating what our research calls your data double.
Ah, yes, the data double. This is the intriguing and sometimes, frankly, unsettling cornerstone of the entire system.
Definitely unsettling.
The data double, often called a digital twin or virtual twin, isn't just your profile picture. It's the whole entity built from every single scattered digital footprint you've left behind.
Like what exactly?
Oh, search histories, purchase receipts, location data, everything from your date of birth, maybe even to your hashed SSN. It's comprehensive.
And here's the crucial tension we need to track today. That data double is used for observation and highly personalized, targeted experiences.
Huge convenience, yeah.
But you sacrifice immense control to power it. That's the trade-off.
It really is. It's the engine of the modern internet, like it or not.
Okay, so let's unpack the anatomy of that data double then. It's not just a flat list of facts, right? It's built on different layers.
Yeah.
Some fixed, some highly volatile.
Exactly. Our sources define three core layers, and they help us understand how quickly that data double can, well, change. We can start with the most changeable pieces, the attributes. Think of these as facts that might change pretty often. Your current bank balance, maybe your medical history details, your physical address, or what you bought last week.
Dynamic stuff.
Very dynamic, frequently updated.
Then we move to preferences. These are your conscious choices, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. They change slower than attributes, but they're still fluid. Your favorite brand of running shoes, the font size you like on a website, or the currency you prefer for transactions.
Your choices.
Your ongoing choices, yes.
And finally, the foundational layer.
The traits. These are the inherent features, the data that's slow changing or basically fixed. Think legal identity stuff. Eye color, nationality, place of birth, legal name.
Okay.
It's like applying for a passport.
Yeah.
The attributes are where you live now. The traits are where you were born.
That makes sense. What I find fascinating, though, is that traditional security relied so heavily on those traits and maybe some attributes like a fixed password or an SSN.
Right.
But the real shift in identity verification, according to our sources, is moving toward a dynamic entity relationship derived from our actual behavior across loads of sites and apps.
Yes, because relying only on static identifiers is just too risky. They get stolen.
All the time.
The critical advancement is that the system doesn't just ask what you know, like the password. It asks how you behave. It compares a new event, say a login or a big purchase, against your established digital footprint.
So the system checks the new access attempt against my usual habits. If this new attempt lines up perfectly with known behavior, maybe logging in at the same time, same device, after looking at the same news sites.
They call that convergence. It means it's probably you. It aligns.
Okay. But if the system spots divergence, a new event that masks or, you know, contradicts previous patterns, like a big purchase from a new city, new OS, using an old password.
That's a massive red flag.
Exactly.
Yeah. And this dynamic behavioral comparison approach, it's incredibly accurate. Research cites authentication success rates up to 95%.
95%, that's high. But doesn't that accuracy rely on tracking my behavior constantly? Seems like a steep price for security.
That is the trade-off, no question. However, this level of behavioral tracking needs specific technical wrappers to manage the data securely, which brings us to unique digital identifiers.
The strings or tokens linking it all.
Precisely. And they are classified based on how they're used, which is vital for security and privacy.
Okay, walk us through those classifications. Why do they matter for how information flows?
So there are two main distinctions. First, scope. Is the identifier omnidirectional, meaning public, easily discoverable, like a domain name or your public email address?
Okay.
Or is it unidirectional? Private, used only within the context of one specific identity relationship, like a temporary session token for just one online banking transaction.
Got it. Public versus private use. And the second distinction?
That relates to interpretation. Is the identifier resolvable? This means it could be instantly dereferenced into the specific entity it represents. Think an IP address pointing directly to a server or an email linking to a specific mailbox.
Makes sense.
Or is it non-resolvable? This is more abstract, like your real name or maybe a hash token. It can only be compared to other data for equivalence. It doesn't resolve to a machine-readable thing on its own.
And why is that crucial?
Because an attacker can't just use a non-resolvable identifier to jump directly to your information. It adds a layer of obscurity.
Okay, so this whole structure, it seems like it's fundamentally built on trust, right? For my dynamic identity to work, someone has to trust the claims I'm making.
Precisely. Digital identity is fundamentally a mutually agreed relationship. The system, or the attributing party, has to trust that the claim, be it your confirmed age or your account role, is correct and actually associated with the entity presenting it.
Which takes us to the technical pillars holding that trust up. Authentication and authorization.
Right. We hear these words a lot, but they have really distinct jobs.
Authentication is step one, proving who you are. It's the assurance of identity.
And authorization comes after identity is verified. It determines what resources that authenticated entity can actually access. Authorization depends completely on successful authentication.
So, like in a university database example.
Yeah, a professor gets authenticated, proves they are who they say they are.
Right.
But they might only be authorized to view student grades, not, say, modify the course curriculum itself.
Gotcha. And when we talk about robust authentication today, we've moved way past just username and password.
Oh, absolutely.
We're talking multi-factor authentication, MFA, combining static identifiers with unique personal attribute, the biometric stuff.
Yeah, fingerprints, iris scans, maybe voice recognition, combining something you know, like a password, with something you are, like a fingerprint. That's the current gold standard for security.
But for real-time security, the most sophisticated tool seems to be risk-based authentication, or RBA.
Yes, RBA. This is where that dynamic identity model we talked about really shines. RBA doesn't just check the password. It evaluates multiple simultaneous entity relationships in real time.
So it's not just looking at the login box. It's checking my device's operating system, the DNS server I'm using, maybe the speed I type at, and correlating all that complex info against my known behavioral events in milliseconds.
Exactly. RBA calculates a transaction risk score. Let's use a clear example. Imagine you usually log into your trading platform every weekday morning, 9.05 a.m., specific corporate network, New York, Chrome browser.
My routine.
Right. Yeah. Then suddenly, a login attempt happens at 3 a.m. Sunday morning using the Tor browser from a mobile device in, say, Vietnam.
Okay, alarm bells.
Big time. Even if the password is correct, the RBA flags the massive divergence in OS, locale, transaction velocity, timing, all of it.
And that transaction risk score immediately spikes, triggering maybe extra MFA challenges or just blocking access altogether.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a very effective defense against stolen credentials. Okay. But again, you see the pattern. It's built on constant surveillance of our digital lives.
Yeah, there's that trade-off again.
And to formalize these trust relationships, especially in business, digital identities are often officially issued through digital certificates. These certificates contain validated user data, often backed by legal guarantees from recognized certification authorities. It moves the transaction beyond just an agreement into, well, legal certainty.
Which brings us right to the societal dimension. Why are businesses so deeply invested in perfecting this data double? We mentioned convenience, but ultimately it's about control and, let's be honest, monetization.
That's the core conflict, isn't it? Corporations thrive by tailoring their services. Personalized ads, fine-tuned search results, purchase suggestions.
All that stuff.
Their success relies entirely on connecting attributes and preferences back to a specific authenticated digital identity. The better they know you, the more revenue they can potentially generate.
But the pendulum seems to be swinging back a bit. The research we looked at highlights a pretty big trend. Users increasingly choosing to pay for online content via subscriptions.
Right, literally paying money.
To move away from exchanging their personal data for free access.
Yeah.
It feels like a direct economic response to privacy concerns.
It absolutely is. And the public demand is translating into legal concepts. Which leads us to one of the most critical legal ideas being debated globally right now.
Yeah.
The right to informational self-determination.
That sounds dense, but it sounds really important.
It is. Legal scholars argue that current data protection rules, while needed, often just focus on protecting the information itself, the data point.
Not the person.
Exactly. Not protecting the individual from the consequences of that data being used, aggregated, interpreted, maybe misinterpreted.
Meaning we're losing control over our digital presence and maybe our personal autonomy because the data double is making decisions for us we didn't agree to or don't even know about.
That's the argument. Proponents say informational self-determination is essential for human autonomy. It gives individuals real control over collection, use, dissemination of their data. It's the legal fight to manage your digital self so it lines up with your real-world self and isn't misused.
And the biggest global attempt to codify this tension so far has been the EU's GDPR, right? General Data Protection Regulation 2018.
GDPR definitely changed the game, massively. It applies worldwide to any company handling personal data of EU citizens.
Wow, worldwide.
If they handle EU data, yes. It forces transparency about data management. Critically, it gives EU citizens rights like the right to be forgotten, data portability, deletion requests. It imposed a huge compliance burden globally just by raising the bar for personal data control.
Okay, while we're on identity and law, we have to touch on the inevitable end of a digital life. Digital death.
It's a profound ethical and technical challenge.
Right.
When someone passes away, their active internet accounts just remain.
Yeah.
Leading to automated, sometimes upsetting situations like birthday reminders for the deceased from social media. Platforms have been forced to react.
Companies like Facebook, now Meta, they offer specific options, don't they?
They do. Either memorialization freezes the profile, allows friends to share memories, or the option for authorized descendants or executors to request full removal of everything, messages, photos, all activity.
A necessary step.
It's a recognition that our digital identities really do extend beyond our physical existence now.
Okay, shifting from the individual to the global scale. Digital identity is also critical for commerce and governance. The financial world, particularly after the 2008 crisis, needed a global uniform identifier.
Which led to the creation of the Legal Entity Identifier, or LEI. Yeah, a 20-digit alphanumeric ISO standard code designed to provide a permanent, globally recognized ID for legal entities and transactions. Decentralized, validated, brings transparency to global financial markets.
So that's like an omnidirectional resolvable identifier, but for organizations.
Precisely.
Meanwhile, governments are rapidly building or expanding national digital ID systems. Streamlining services, validating physical documents.
Absolutely. We see huge initiatives globally. Systems like India's Aadhaar, unique ID for over a billion residents.
Incredible scale.
Estonia's digital card lets citizens vote, access medical records, do business completely digitally. And Ukraine's Daya app, which has actually legalized digital passports, same standing as physical ones.
And in the U.S., it's more decentralized, but there are efforts.
Yeah, proposed federal legislation like H.R. 4258 and S. 4528 aims for a unified, government-wide approach, starting with things like driver's licenses, birth certificates, and state pilots, like Colorado's My Colorado app, have been accepting digital IDs for some transactions since 2019.
Right.
And let's not forget the EU. They recently adopted Regulation 2024-1183, creating the European Digital Identity Framework. Includes the big one, the EU Digital Identity Wallet, a massive push for identity portability and security across the continent.
Okay, so all these modern systems, they seem to rely heavily on something called networked identity, using compound trust relationships.
Yes, and this enables probably the most crucial privacy feature of modern identity management, selective disclosure.
Selective disclosure sounds technical, but important.
Very. The analogy makes it clearer. Imagine booking a hire car. Traditionally, you hand over your driver's license. Full name, birth date, address, picture way more info than the car company actually needs. Selective disclosure changes that. In a networked identity system, your driving agency could electronically vouch only for your age and qualification status. Your bank could assert only your required banking details.
Ah, so the rental company never gets my name or address or date of birth.
Exactly. You share only the necessary proof points for that specific transaction. You maintain complete privacy over the rest of your sensitive identity file.
That sounds like the ideal balance, convenience and control.
That's the goal, yes.
Okay, so to recap what we've deep dived into today, we are all generating this incredibly detailed dynamic data double. It powers the personalization we enjoy, maybe even rely on. But its existence is forcing a huge legal battle for informational self-determination, and it's driving the adoption of highly sophisticated and highly tracked authentication methods like RBA.
We've moved so far beyond just the password. We're in a world where our behavioral patterns, the convergence or divergence of our digital habits, are becoming the most trusted form of verification.
Okay, here's the final provocative thought for you to carry forward. As global reliance on digital identity systems accelerates, the discussion isn't just about protecting data anymore. It's shifting towards whether this digital self, this data double, should be granted some kind of legal standing.
Interesting.
Maybe even enshrined as a new form of human right, giving us the absolute right to control its evolution and its application. So what does it mean for you if your digital representation holds actual legal status? And how much control are you willing to fight for over that crucial entity?